Hey everyone, welcome to the Delta Flyers with Tom and Harry as we journey through episodes of Star Trek Voyager. Your two hosts along this journey are myself, Garrett Wong, and of course my co-host, Mr. Robert Duncan.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Yes, sir.
Hi, I ASMR'd your last name.
Yes, you did.
Yes.
Wow. Wow. Yeah.
All right.
That's nice. I never knew about ASMR until you.
Until our podcast.
You use that. Yeah. See, all these things we learn on the Delta Flyers podcast. Yeah.
We're learning and we're teaching others that don't know about it. So this is a very informative and crucial podcast.
It's basically school.
For humanity.
It's like you're doing school right now. And you will get a degree.
Yeah.
You will get a certificate of intelligence when we are done.
Can you imagine if we actually had degrees that we sent to all the fans? That'd be kind of cool. Delta Flyers Academy.
Of course. Yes.
You are now an official expert when it comes to Star Trek Voyager episodes.
Yes. As much as we can make you, at least.
Right. We'll try our best. Hey, let me ask you right now, what the heck is going on in BC? Is it better now? The craziness?
You mean with the floods and the weather and all that stuff?
Yes.
It is better. It is better. Yes. Okay. It's getting better.
Okay.
The roads were washed out. It was really bad for a while.
Yeah.
Farms were flooded. A lot of, livestock and things died because of it. Yeah, but it's getting better. It's getting better.
And it was affecting Delta Flyers merch too.
Yes, it was.
So to send one t-shirt from Vancouver to another part of Canada was an exorbitant amount of money that they were asking
for. And it was weeks for, no guarantees.
Yeah.
Rebecca had ordered some Christmas presents for my coworkers on the show on Resident Alien.
Mm.
And we ordered them over like a month ago and still haven't gotten them because the shipping is all messed up here. Getting trucks across, the mountains and into BC. So it's been a bit of a mess.
I mean, especially in this day and age of Amazon Prime where you can get it the same day. And then for you to have to wait 1 month waiting. Are you still waiting?
Yeah.
It hasn't even come in. It's been a month.
Oh,
that's insane. Yeah.
We'll see. Hopefully. Fingers crossed.
Okay.
Yeah. How are you doing?
I'm okay. I'm in Calgary now. So I, got up here and lending my time and support for Megan, who's been dealing with two deaths in the family, her grandfather and her cousin, right, within a week of each other. And just, it's been rough.
Yeah.
So, So I'm here to support her and be there for her. So that's been my dealio. I left, the U.S. a little earlier than I wanted to, but of course, when it comes to tragedy and loss, you can't put timing on that. It just happens. Right. So,
it's good. It's good to have people around, it's good not to be alone for everyone when we're down and we're grieving and we're processing really important things like that. So that's
agreed.
Great.
Agreed. And this week's episode is Killing Game Part 2.
Mm-hmm.
So we've already seen Part 1, and I'm very excited to watch the conclusion of this two-parter, which I love. And you're okay with
it. I'm excited to see Part 2. I'm very excited to see Part 2.
Yeah. Okay.
Yes.
All right.
Let's go watch it.
Let's go watch this.
Okay. See you soon.
See ya. Hey, everyone. We are back from watching Killing Game Part 2.
Oh, my gosh.
Wow.
Lots of action. We survived.
We survived.
I can't believe it.
Okay.
Finally, the neural implants have been turned off, and we're back to our normal selves.
The interfaces. The neural interfaces.
Yes.
Okay, here we go. Let's start with our poetry synopsis of part two.
Let's do.
Here's my haiku.
Okay.
I'm going to give you my haiku, but I'm going to give you an alternate ending line after I'm done.
Okay.
Here we go.
Okay.
Fighting rages on. Bobby almost shoots Harry. A truce is brokered. Okay, so that's the original. Now,
yeah, well, it's good. Yeah, it's good.
Here solid. Go. Here's the alternate ending, okay?
Okay.
Fighting rages on. Bobby almost shoots Harry. Accept this trophy.
I like that one.
Shameless final line, right?
Yeah, okay. I like that.
All right.
Like
so that. In our compilation book that we publish, I want the alternate to be in there
alternate
too.
Alternate ending.
In parentheses at the
okay.
end. Okay. Thank okay. you. How about that limerick?
Okay, here we go with a limerick for The Killing Game Part 2. The Herogian want to keep fighting a future that Carr tries rewriting. The neural implants finally break. The whole crew is wide awake. Janeway says a truce with some holotech is what she's prescribing.
Nice. Yeah. I like how you extended that fighting in there.
I did.
Was that on purpose?
I was trying to land the rhyme setup. That was if you got to hit that first. The Herogian just want to keep fighting. Yeah, because the limerick's got to be in that rhyme setup.
Yeah,
That hook. So
yeah.
I had to hit it hard.
Yeah, fighting. Okay,
It was hard to find. Hmm. I was thinking about fight, and we both used fight, by the way.
Yes, we did. We did. Yes.
So clearly that was a theme. But I was trying to think of something with fight, and then I got to fighting, and I was like, oh, now I have to rhyme fighting. And then I found rewriting. And I'm like,
perfect.
Wait, rewrite. Yeah, Carr wants to rewrite their future. Okay, yeah. Rewriting. And I'm like, now I'm stuck. Yeah, how do I get stuck. Janeway in on that?
So did RJ come up with prescribing? Was that RJ's?
I'm not telling anybody.
Yes, you will tell me now, Robbie. All right.
Anyway, I love our poetry.
Yeah.
I love our poetry.
So fun.
Really fun.
Let's just, okay, same writers, obviously, Manosky and Braga. But different director, because that's just how. See, I always felt that was, I know why it's that way, but I always felt that was weird whenever we do two parters and there's another director. I don't remember Victor Lobel. I feel bad.
I really remember him very well either. I feel like he was a visual effects guy, maybe.
Mm.
I haven't even looked up his credits.
Well, I did. He directed V, the 80s series.
Oh, the original V.
Yes.
Oh, interesting. Because I directed on the second round of V in the late 2000s. So.
You didn't tell me you worked on V, the new V.
Victor Lobel and I guess. Yeah, I did.
Well,
I
directed what episode? That. Which episode did you do?
I did the season finales, first season finale.
Oh, wow.
I forget what it was called.
So you worked with Logan, the young kid in there.
All of them. Yeah.
I think Laura Vandervoort is also in that as well. Yeah. So I had no clue you did that.
I did. So V is a common theme, a common thread for Victor Lobel and myself.
Yes.
Victor Lobel directed a bunch of Deep Space Nines, I think.
Okay.
He did like four. He did on DS9. He did For the Uniform, mm-hmm. Who Mourns for Mourn, mm-hmm. In the Pale Moonlight, and Prodigal Daughter.
Gotcha.
So he directed four DS9s. So that must be how he came to us.
Yeah,
the Killing Game Part 2, I think, was his first episode with us.
Yes. I don't recall him working on anything before this.
No.
So, neither you or I have a lot of recollection of working with Victor Lobel.
No, I don't really remember it, but the thing I will say is it's surprising to me that they would have handed him such an important episode when he had never directed any of our shows before.
Right.
So
that
surprises me. This feels like the kind of thing you'd hand David Livingston or Rick Colby or someone who had directed a bunch of our episodes at this point. Although I thought Victor did a great job.
He did.
And I will say, my feelings, if you listen to part one of our podcast recap, the one big criticism I had is that we weren't playing our regular characters. We were playing these sort of play within a play. We were playing characters that Yeah, I was really happy to see those neural implants come off, and we got to play ourselves again. It was even just having Janeway and Seven from the start of this episode off the neural whatever
interface,
interface, the off the neural interface thing was a treat.
So now we're in the corridor to begin. We have Janeway and Seven, and they have to fight past German soldiers who have now leaked into the deck five, deck six, deck seven area, I suppose. So they're on Voyager now. So they're in the way, and clearly it's dangerous because all the safety protocols are still off. So any type of bullet or any weapon fired by a holographic weapon is still going to do as much damage as a real weapon.
By the way, I did like that there was a recap before this episode. You know, they went back and they kind of showed highlights from the previous episode to get us into this episode. And I was like, that's awesome. Like, we're used to that now in television because so many shows are serialized, but we didn't do recaps on our show on Voyager. So it was nice when I sat down to watch this, that it sort of gave you the highlights from last week so that you're right up to speed as the story starts.
Yeah.
So like the runaway, running away from the big bulkhead that exploded and exposed the holodeck and some of the corridors, like that was cool to kind of bring us right back to where we left off.
Yeah. To have a little,
that was very cool.
Yeah. A little reminder of what's been going on beforehand.
Yep.
So we're in Astrometrics. Janeway and Seven are there, and they're trying to strategize, basically. They have to take out another German soldier that's there. With one quick, swift little move, Janeway knocks that guy out, and now the strategy begins. How do we release all the rest of the Voyager crew members from this interface that is controlling their actions?
Yeah, they have to get these neural interfaces shut down because... because otherwise they're just locked in this game that they're not even aware of. And they realize in Astrometrics that the crew, the neural interfaces are all being controlled in sickbay.
Right.
So they've got to get into sickbay.
Yeah. But
sickbay is totally, you know, very heavily guarded. And they're going to have some fighters. They can't do it with just the two of them.
Yeah.
So they're going to have to go get some of the French resistance or the Americans or some of the people in the holodeck to come help them fight.
They need help.
They need help. And then we go to the bridge. And Harry is on the bridge.
Harry and his hair in his face. There he
is. His hair in his face, which I love.
Yeah.
Did you have that big bump at this point? The big giant red bruise? I didn't notice it until halfway through. And then I was like, well, when did he must have had that the whole time.
I've had a bruise this entire time. Yes.
It's a big red giant. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know, I got hit really hard in the last episode, so that probably exacerbated
that came from the bruise.
I think that's where that
came from. If it was consistent, because I didn't really notice it as much, and then late in the episode I was like, whoa, that looks good. That's a big bruise
That's a big bruise.
But I wasn't quite sure when it happened, but you know, there's a lot happening in this episode.
There is
Taranj arrives up there because Carr's on the bridge.
Alpha Hirogen Carr is there, right?
Alpha Hirogen Carr
shows up.
And Alpha Hirogen Carr, by the way, suggests that Harry suggests that they allow him to go down to engineering and initiate this power surge. And Carr says, no, he wants to save this technology. And Harry's like, we're going to have to, you know, this may blow up the whole ship if this thing overloads. And then Taranj arrives and he wants to kill the prey. And just move on. But Carr says, no, we've got to preserve this technology. We can't jeopardize this ship exploding. So he tells Taranj to take all the other hunters from the Klingon simulation and subdue everybody. So they take the Hirogen out of the Klingons. So the Klingons are sort of left by themselves waiting for a war, which we find out later. There's Neelix getting drunk with some,
so
Klingons,
good.
Which is great.
Let's not jump the gun, though. Let's keep going. Okay.
Then we go to the bar after that, and there's Captain Miller and handsome Bobby Davis.
Well, we don't know his name is Davis yet. We just know Bobby at this point.
Bobby.
It's Lieutenant later. Bobby. Yes, Lieutenant Bobby. We don't even know his rank. It's just Bobby at this point.
And Brigitte is there. And who is Tuvok? What is his character's name in this holodeck? I never heard it, and I can't find it.
Yeah, I know. I have to figure that. We should look at the script and figure that one out.
We should.
Yeah. So there's a whole conversation right here about it's a German secret compound, because you guys are still clueless. You still think you're the characters in the holodeck, right? And it's a German secret compound. And there's a lot of talk about, you know, what this could be. And Chakotay, as Miller, has already radioed into headquarters, and military intelligence has said, hey, this must be an advanced munitions laboratory to build some kind of super weapon. So then Chakotay is, you know, he's concerned, Miller's concerned, and he orders Bobby to set up the transmitter and post guards around the perimeter, which he says, aye, sir, or yes, sir. And then as you go do that, then he orders you to go get the weapons that are hidden by the French resistance throughout the city. It's sort of like, how many jobs are you going to give?
I'm doing a lot.
Bobby
can do a lot of things.
Bobby is good, but I don't know if
Bobby's that good. He is that good.
You really?
Yes.
You think Bobby's good. He can multitask? Is that what you're saying?
He can. And Brigitte, you know, Brigitte never returned his letters, so she missed out. Because Bobby's good. By the way, I love when Chakotay, as Captain Miller, says to Brigitte, he goes, you've done a bang-up job up till now, but we'll take it from here.
Yeah.
Tell your people to lie low and the Americans say thanks. Such an American, like,
It really was. It really was. I mean, it was sort of like, you know, your little deeds that you did, thanks a lot. Your little things that you helped out with, which were really small in comparison to us Americans. Yeah, it was very, how great are we as Americans?
It definitely captured that sort of World War II spirit of that confidence of the military forces.
And yeah.
It's definitely did that. And I loved how Brigitte didn't want to just sit back at this moment. She's like, she wants to fight.
Yes.
And Tuvok, whoever his character is, we don't know his name in this.
Can we give him a name? Let's give him a name. What are you going to get? I'm going to just call him Philippe.
Okay.
It's Philippe.
Brigitte and Philippe.
Oui.
Philippe says, Tuvok says, you know, maybe he's right. That's the military. That's the army. Let's just show them where the weapons are. And so Brigitte has to go over with Bobby and talk about where the weapons are. So that's what gets them together for this little side conversation.
Right. She unrolls the map and she shows, hey, they're all buried right here up by the hill over yonder kind of a thing. Yeah.
They start going through the hidden weapons and then, of course, you know, well, why didn't I hear from you? And they talk about a movie they went to.
Here it comes.
Yes. They sort of disagree about which movie they saw last and what scene it was. And then Bobby is like, no, I don't think it was that movie. He gives and then she thinks about it. And it was a nice moment where we're playing these characters with these neural interfaces, so we don't know who we are. But for a moment, I saw Roxanne play like, am I remembering correctly? Like I'm remembering in the holodeck, but am I also remembering something else? I don't know. I interpreted that. I wish there was more of that. I wish all of us that were supposed to have these neural implants had moments of like, wait a minute, I'm kind of
am I in a dream, kind of thing,
am I in a dream? I wish we had played that harder, but I thought Roxanne did it there and it was great.
Such a long scene and long dialogue scene. I wrote that down. I go, this is like the longest dialogue scene between Paris and Torres.
It was a long time. He pulls over a chair. He asks, you know, how she got pregnant. She talks about taking advantage of this, the second in command. She was interested in her and she was trying to be, you know, a spy. And he says, I'm really sorry. I'm sorry that you were put in that position.
Right.
But very understanding.
But there's also that point where you're like, well, I guess you've moved on or something. She goes like, well, there's never been another. So it's sort of, I didn't quite understand what, I mean, is Brigitte still into Bobby? Is that what she's saying?
I think so.
Or because she's playing quite, you know, like she's got her cards very close to her vest. She's not really divulging her feelings. So I wasn't sure where that was going exactly.
You know what could have been interesting? I'm just spitballing on this, but like, because so much of these holodeck characters and relationships were kind of a version of our real relationships, but not.
Correct.
it would have been interesting if we had played in the holodeck simulation, totally different relationships.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
That
yeah.
could have been really interesting instead yes. of just playing a watered down version or whatever of mm-hmm. like if, you know, if I don't know who, you know.
You're saying if Paris was in a relationship with Seven of Nine's character is what you're saying,
yeah,
right? Not Brigitte, Roxanne.
Yeah, or if Chakotay, you know, if Captain Miller, which was Chakotay, if he was the one in a relationship and with Brigitte or something,
yes,
and
then, of course,
and then maybe, you know, Tuvok was in a relationship with the captain or something. I don't know.
Yeah, yeah,
would have been interesting to mix it up.
Sure.
In this one little, you know, it just occurred to me in this moment. But I think part of my struggle sometimes with the story, I know that the intention was to echo the stories of our real show, but they didn't really, they sort of were off. And so it might've been better just to go completely dive in deep to something brand new and weird that we would never do on the show.
That certainly would have been
like,
yes, that would have been an interesting choice. Miller with Brigitte. Okay.
Yeah.
Philippe, AKA Tuvok with Katrin. Janeway, right?
Yes.
I like it.
That would have been interesting to me.
Yes, and especially interracial love back in the 30s. My goodness, there's so many things that could have been played upon right there. You know, so many.
There would have been
angles. I wonder if layers.
Maybe they considered it and decided to keep it a little closer to our, just so it wasn't totally confusing. But I don't know. I think it just occurred to me that would have been interesting.
And it would have been interesting if Bobby was Tom Paris on the bridge and Harry was Bobby.
Yes.
Because in real life, it is Garrett who loves World War II stories. And
I know.
Era.
I know.
It's okay. It's all right. It's sad. Well, so this entire love fest is interrupted
by noise, by the bar.
Yes. Everyone draws weapons and
draw the weapons, points them below the bar.
Exactly. And there's a panel opens up and clearly it's a Jeffries tube.
Yeah,
and out
but they don't Janeway. Know that because they're know in that. The they simulation and they have a neural interface.
No,
so they Janeway draw their weapons and Seven says,
Janeway says, yeah.
Janeway says, hold your fire.
Yeah.
I love her accent on that line.
Hold your fire. Yeah, she did.
Hold your fire. It sounded like Iowa or something. It was like an Iowa farm girl.
Is that what you heard? Kind of.
I heard
like matinee kind of like, you know,
like old
Hollywood.
Old
sort
Hollywood.
Of, old Hollywood.
Yeah, a little bit like that. A little Catherine Hepburn.
Yeah, Catherine Hepburn came out a little bit. I felt. Yeah. And this is when Chakotay introduces, he says, I'm Captain Miller. Here's Lieutenant Davis. So now we know your rank. We know your last name. And this is the first time that we know that you're Davis. You were just Bobby before, right?
Yeah.
And Captain Miller, he wants to call it an airstrike. He feels like, look, you know, we just got to take out this compound, which is developing a secret weapon.
It's a munitions lab.
And
Janeway says, yeah, that's what it is, a munitions lab. Like, let's blow it up. She goes, no.
Wait.
We want to save it.
Yes.
There's new technologies in there.
Yes.
And it could blow up the whole valley,
she says. Yeah, she goes, I got a plan because I'm going to take out the generator that runs the whole compound.
Mm-hmm.
And really in her, what she's saying is she's got to take out that console in sick bay is what it is, right? Mm-hmm. So now we go to sick bay. The doctor is trying to treat a critically injured Starfleet crew member who's been in some holodeck simulation and injured. Mm-hmm. And then quickly the Hirogen medic says, no. You need to help out this guy, which a Hirogen warrior comes in, a hunter, and he has
he's got burns.
Yeah,
a little burn.
Yeah, you know, he's walking on his own. You know, he doesn't need any help. He's not on a stretcher, but he orders the doctor to help him first. And the doctor flips out. He's like, what kind of doctor are you? Everyone knows that you need to help those that are injured the most. The more critically injured need to be helped first. And then the Hirogen medic says, you know, if you don't help my guy, our guy first, I'm going to deactivate you. The doctor complains more. And indeed, he is deactivated by the Hirogen and he's gone.
Yep.
Out of that scene.
And he also says at the end, after he deactivates the doctor, he tells his buddy, he says, from now on, leave the Starfleet
Oh yeah, leave them where they lie. Yeah, he
doesn't leave them where they lie.
Helping them.
Only bring our guys in here.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That looks
that's hardcore.
So,
not good.
Yeah. Also puts our our series regular characters at risk now, even more risk.
Correct.
Because the audience knows if they get shot by these weapons in the holodeck where the safety protocols are off, that they'll be left to die.
That's right. That's right.
We go to the caves now. Neelix is drunk. And oh my God, did I love Johnny Phillips playing, playing a Klingon.
Oh my God.
With
I gotta say,
a drunk Klingon. He's ready for a fight. It's the eve of battle. I don't know what they were saying half the time. And the,
well, he's talking about it being the dry season.
Right? Yeah.
And that was just so funny. And I do remember watching this when it first was airing on UPN while we were filming. I remember watching. Because for me, what do I remember? I remember my episodes on the bridge in the sick bay area, in mess hall, fighting against or doing the Hirogen's bidding, kind of standing up against them. I remember all my scenes, but I don't remember anyone else's scene. So when I watched this episode, when it's finally aired, I was so excited to see Ethan Phillips and
he committed.
What he had done. Oh, he went all the way. There was
he went all the way.
Oh, it was so good.
It was really good.
Oh, I loved it so much. So funny.
It was awesome. That was a great scene. And nothing really happens there, but we do set up that these guys are waiting to fight.
Yeah.
And we get a little comic relief. It's just a little B story, but it's
a little
fun.
Levity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Agreed.
And I loved his commitment, Ethan Phillips' commitment in this to the Klingon kind of character. And he was great. So we go out in the hall and there's Harry. There's gunshots everywhere and a Nazi appears around a corner.
And then he's drawn his weapon at Harry. He's
his
about
weapon
to shoot
at Harry, about to shoot him. And then all of a sudden we hear a shot and the Nazi goes down and Harry looks behind him and there's Paris or Bobby.
Yes.
And
Bobby, I do want to make clear for our, because when you're saying Nazi, I'm going to say the German soldier, because he wasn't like the SS. That guy's a Nazi, right? So the SS captain played by J. Paul, that guy's Nazi. But a lot of those guys were just German soldiers, right? So I think we need to make that distinction between the two.
Yeah.
So as he falls down, Harry turns around and sees it's Tom. And he even yells, Tom! And Harry goes, wrong guy. Like just kind of, you know, kind of, I don't want to say jerky, but he just, he's on a mission.
Well, he didn't know who you were.
No, he doesn't know.
Bobby did not know who Harry was.
Yeah.
And held his handgun up and
put a gun to my face.
He says, why are you out of uniform? He says to you.
Yeah.
And then Bobby goes, I don't have time for 20 questions. You say you're an American. Okay. Then if Betty Grable came walking around that corner, what part of her would you be staring at? And then you see Harry thinking,
I'm like, oh my God, what is it?
And you go back to Bobby and he goes, time's up.
Do you know what I did? I remember this now. After watching this, as an actor, my justification was I had no clue what part of the body it was. So I guessed, like Harry guessed that it was the legs and it was right. That was my justification to make me even more like, oh. And so when your character said, lucky for you, Megan quickly chimed in. No, lucky for you that you didn't kill your best friend, Tom. That's why.
That's
what she said.
Yeah. That would have been horrible.
That would have been horrible if you woke up after your interface is deconnected and you ask, where's Harry? And then someone goes, oh, you shot him in the face. He's dead.
Him.
Yeah, you killed him. So lucky for you as well.
Yeah. I didn't like the way I was holding the handgun. I was holding, I was stabilizing my wrist way down here. And I'm not as familiar with handguns. I don't own a handgun.
Do you mean when you were holding it and we were talking, or when you were pointing it at me?
When I was pointing it at you, now having directed a lot of shows with weapons in it,
things,
I know that I would stabilize my hand a little differently. But I was holding like my forearm.
Were you holding your forearm? I didn't even notice that.
Yeah, I was not.
I didn't even notice that.
It was bad technique. Now that I know a little more than I did back then.
Yeah. I didn't. It didn't come off as being, you know, a huge error. I mean, it didn't come. I didn't notice it at all. So
yeah,
I think that's just you being picky. But now you know.
Now I know.
We grabbed it here, right? Okay.
Yeah. All right. So then we go to the tube. We go to the Jeffries tube, and Janeway and Chakotay are in there. And I love a little banter about you know, you're different than the girls back home.
He said, what did he say? He says, you're more gung-ho than the girls back home.
Yeah.
Gung-ho, which is a
nice little, again, sort of like an echo of the relationship they have on our show, but not exactly
it.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, Janeway says, you know, we're about to enter the underground caves or something. And she says, I must warn you, the cave people are an eccentric people.
The cave people.
And, you know, it's the Klingons, but she's just trying to explain like tunnels under this town and there's weird people.
Yeah,
that speak Klingon or something.
Could that be a T-shirt, cute. Robbie? Could it just an image of a bunch of Klingons and underneath it says the cave people.
The cave people. They're an eccentric people.
They are. They are.
We go into the caves with Janeway and Chakotay, and there's the Klingon are singing.
Yeah.
And there's Neelix singing along with them.
Yeah.
And and he comes to ask them who they are, and they say, what house are you from? And Janeway kind of says, the house of Tomag or Tomag.
Tomag.
Yes. And then, the house of, she just makes it up.
Right. But then Ethan's response is hilarious. He's like, Tomag.
Tomag.
I've never heard of it. Yeah.
Also, like,
brilliant.
Yeah. Then he brings a drink down. They're gonna drink before battle. So he brings down his like satchel of Klingon ale.
Yeah.
And it's a double. I never have seen one of these before. It's a double satchel. Like, it's got two
sides.
Okay. Sides to it. It looks like a batleth. Like kind of how the batleth has two
smart
ends.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was a nice little detail. I thought that was cool.
Not very practical, but I understood. It was different. But the whole purpose was to sort of kind of get the Klingons to ally with them in a way.
And also distract them a bit because Janeway,
she
says, don't drink that. It's twice as strong as the stuff you're used to.
Right.
And then Chakotay stays back with Neelix and the other Klingon on the holodeck. And she goes around and finds a panel hidden in some rocks, holodeck panel, access panel. And she beams in the doctor. Initiates his program, and now the doctor is part of this.
Yes.
And then they go back and there was a moment at the end of that scene where Neelix and the doctor are left alone, and Neelix still thinks he's a Klingon, so he's still acting it up, and he sort of hit Bob on the shoulder.
Oh, I love
and he
that.
Reacted that and then he hit him again.
Oh, I
hit him like
that.
Three times.
Oh, and, yes.
And I forget what the doctor said, but please don't do that or something. I swear they must have added it. I can't imagine that was scripted. I bet they added the padding, the hitting, and I'm sure that Ethan and Bob made that bit up. It was funny, though.
I mean, that's one of the few times that maybe an ad lib was allowed.
Yeah,
in there, you know.
Yeah,
and I love the comment that the Neelix as a Klingon says to the doctor when he first sees the doctor, he says, oh, is this one of your warriors? And he goes, he's a frail looking thing. What he calls him that.
Yes.
Oh my God. I know you definitely don't know this because you don't really watch my reaction videos and you don't really see those, you know, cause they come in the finished product, but I talked about how smart Bob is because we typically are not allowed to, we're not allowed to ad lib. But if you think about it, the doctor has found a way around that because whenever you cut to the end of a scene with the doctor, he always does a, he does a verbal ad lib.
Yeah.
He always makes
like
that. He makes this audible
sort of sound.
Yeah. He makes a sound, which he can't get in trouble for because he's not saying a word. He's just doing an extra. But that sound is always a comment. His final last word.
Always like the last button of the scene.
You know what? The doctor's like a teenager. Always has to have the last word. And he has the last word with the button with a sound. And Bob Picardo, as smart as he is, Mr. Yale himself is able to squeeze that in at the end of almost every scene from this season on. I think he has a little,
he always gives a good button at the end.
A little
for
button.
Sure.
Exactly. Yeah. But again, him hit at Ethan choosing to pop the doctor that one time, yeah, and no reaction, and the second time really hard was just classic. It's just like, funny. Oh, it was so funny. Good stuff.
Next we go back to the holodeck and there's a battle raging and we see through a window that Brigitte and Philippe, I guess, whatever, yes, we're going to call him, Tuvok,
yeah,
are firing. And then there's Tom as Tom's Bobby, yeah, behind Bobby. Them. Yeah, yeah, but he's behind them. And I'm thinking, wait a minute. He's the army guy.
He's a soldier.
He's the army guy. And he's got the pregnant lady in front of him. What?
As your shield.
Why didn't I say, like, no. I'm going to go down front, put the pregnant lady behind me. I can't believe I let them get away with that.
I love it. Seven returns to tweak some weapons with German technology. Yeah, right.
And Tuvok as Philippe is very suspicious.
Oh, she goes, so suspicious.
Yeah, she says it's some German technology.
So funny.
She's trying to fix this hand grenade or whatever she's working on. She's trying to fix up this technology.
Yeah.
We go out to the street. And the Hirogen are pinned down. And what's his name?
Taranj requests for more backup, right?
Yeah. And he wants three nucleonic charges to penetrate the structure so he can get in.
Yeah.
And Carr says, no.
No way.
But I don't want to destroy anything, but I'll send you some more hunters.
There you go.
So he's getting extra hunters. And then we go inside the Jefferies tube again. Yeah.
Janeway Chakotay.
We find out there's a force field around the surgical bay.
Yeah.
And so they set a bomb right under sick bay.
Yeah.
And they set this ticking bomb for 5 minutes, enough time for them to get up there.
With the old fashioned clock.
Oh, with the old, from the 1940s clock. That's a classic.
I love it.
Ticking time bomb out of a cartoon. It was very funny. Yeah,
it was.
We go up to sick bay and the Hirogen doctor is taken prisoner by Chakotay and Janeway. She goes over to the doctor's desk to disable the force field. We go on the bridge and Carr calls to sick bay and there's no answer. So he sends some troops down. Chakotay is disarmed in the hallway as the troops are heading towards sick bay.
Yeah.
And the doc Hirogen guy, what's his name? Hirogen doctor.
Oh, we just say Hirogen medic or doctor.
Medic, doctor.
Yeah.
He takes Chakotay's pistol, runs back into sick bay. Janeway starts to try to get away and he shoots and she takes a shot to the leg. And this is where I was like, I wish she had not gotten shot. I wish
not in the leg, for God's sake. Should have been in the shoulder or something.
Or if she had tried to dive out of the way and twisted her ankle, I could have bought that.
Or something like that. Or maybe grazed her in the forehead or something different. But and also interesting to note, at the top of this scene, the Hirogen medic tells Carr that five hunters have been killed in the last hour. So Hirogens are now dying. Okay. Mm-hmm. So this is just
The safety protocols are off. So everybody's up for grabs.
Yes, this is one huge cluster beep. So it's a problem. So now Janeway hobbles off, and that's when the Hirogen medic types into the computer, the laptop, or whatever.
Yeah,
and it says access denied. So he's now unable.
He's like, wait a minute, what? He's like,
what?
And then we cut down to the bomb.
Yeah, and
kaboom!
Bye bye, Hirogen medic. He's done.
He's done.
Yeah.
We see sick bay blow up in a nice, a pretty good visual effect out in the hallway. It's okay.
It was all right. It was 90s. It was a 90s.
Yeah, it was the 90s.
For sure. It could have been better. It's okay for the 90s.
But then I wrote down the neural interfaces are finally disabled.
Yes, they're disabled. Yay!
I was so excited.
Now
and
Robbie
everybody
was
grabs
happy.
Their necks.
Yeah.
Everybody goes, ow, ow.
Ah. And they know
and then
who they
Seven
are.
Seven tries to quickly explain. We're on a holodeck simulation. We've been boarded.
Yeah.
But the Nazis and the German troops
up.
And Taranj, the Hirogens, and they storm in and take them hostage.
Mm-hmm.
So now they are prisoners.
And the SS captain slaps Torres because he's disgusted by her. Slaps.
Yes.
How'd you feel about that? Your lady getting slapped.
I didn't like it. I didn't like that. I think Tom did jump up to defend her, sort of pulled her away.
Yeah.
And at first I was like, that's not a strong enough move, dude. Why didn't you go after him? But then a moment later, he does go after the Nazi second in command guy. What's his name? The commandant?
No, he's not commandant. He is a captain, actually. Captain, he's an SS captain. I don't know his actual name. I can't remember it. The commandant is Carr.
But Tom does say at one point, he goes, pig, and he jumps at him.
But then
Nazi draws the gun.
Right. And then that's when I wrote down, how do you like a gun in your face, Tom? Because, you know, you put a gun in my face earlier. Yeah. So now you got a gun in your face.
I know. Lot of weapons in this.
This is a weapon.
Lots of weapons. Episode, yes. And a lot of, by the way, shell ejections out of all these weapons during these battles. So we were firing a lot of blank loads there. There were obviously, you know, we've talked on the podcast before about weapons on set and safety concerns and things like that.
But the shell is still being ejected, even though the shell's
being ejected and it's it's hot brass. It's still hot.
Do you know if anyone
gunpowder?
Yeah. Do you recall anyone getting burnt or getting
I don't remember, but that happens often.
Yep.
When you're shooting blanks like that. And there were a lot of weapons there. I do remember lining up in some of the scenes later when we were behind the barricades and Tuvok had a rifle and Tom Paris had a rifle and there were shell casings getting ejected.
Yeah.
And so you have to be careful when you stage scenes and that the weapons don't eject onto an actor next to you. So, I was also looking for earplugs because they're very loud. And so I thought I did see some in Tim Russ, some earplugs at one point, but I was very aware of a lot of, you know, Roxanne Dawson was firing a handgun.
Yeah, she had a handgun.
Ejecting shells. Yeah, so there was a lot of real simulated gunfire with hot brass getting ejected throughout the episode. And I don't recall our safety protocols. I'm going to assume that they were up to the standards of the time for sure. I think things are even generally safer now. And certainly since that tragedy that happened on set in down near Albuquerque, things are even more more safe. The protocols.
By the way, let me just quickly interrupt.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly, but then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Here in America, work is in trouble. We've offshored our manufacturing, sent away good jobs, and lost so much ability to make things. American Giant is a company that's pushing back against this tide. They make high-quality clothing, sweatshirts, jeans, dresses, jackets, and so much more right here in the USA. Visit American-Giant.com and get 20% off your first order when you use code STAPLE20 at checkout. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com. Promo code STAPLE20.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Since we are in a World War II simulation, Megan and I just watched 1917. Have you seen that? The Sam Mendes movie?
Yeah.
That's like one take.
Yeah,
it's like
the whole movie is a one-er. It's not like really,
one,
but
it's not completely, but maybe there's two cuts in the entire film. It's still simulated. Amazing, though.
It's pretty amazing. Yeah.
Gosh, I was blown away. I really was. Yeah. So anyway.
Yeah, okay. It's pretty phenomenal.
Yeah. All right, let's move on.
We are in the Klingon simulation, right?
Yeah,
back to the caves. And because these neural interfaces have been deactivated, Neelix is back, but he still looks like a Klingon.
Yes. And he looks great. He looked great as a Klingon, by the way.
Yeah.
He looked really good.
But he's acting like Neelix now, which is funny because... and the Klingons wake up, the hungover Klingons wake up and they're like, time for battle.
Yeah.
And they come over and they grab Neelix and the doctor. They hand the doctor a hand weapon, a knife or something. Neelix, a batleth.
Yeah.
And so as they're heading off to battle, you hear Neelix go, kapla.
Right.
Doctor goes, tally-ho.
Yeah. I mean, he says tally ho, which was funny, but then I thought, when did the doctor become British? I don't know what's happening right here. Huh? Okay.
I don't know.
But it is still a funny
scene. That's what they wrote.
Yeah, that's what they wrote. And he went tally ho. And I thought,
tally ho.
All right.
And off they go to war. They were our comic relief guys. Neil and the doctor. We go to the ready room and Janeway. Comes in with her
who is sometimes wound. Aware of her gunshot wound and other times not. Yes.
Yeah. And Kate is such a good actress, but that was a hard injury to sustain and match with all the other things they scripted her to do. That's what I think led to some of the inconsistencies, but anyway, she comes in and he wants her to help, with, you know, what's going on. He threatens to kill all of them if she doesn't cooperate with him. She refuses. And he gets really intense. He says, this is not a game. Mm-hmm. And then goes on to explain what his thoughts are, that he wants a future for his people. Yeah. And he says, my people are hunting themselves into extinction. And it seems like the holodeck. Oh, I wrote down for myself. He's talking about how badly he wants to get this technology from Voyager.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thinking the whole time, you guys have spaceships and all kinds of weapons. How hard is it to invent a virtual reality simulation situation? Like, we have, flight simulators that have been around in America for 50 years. Like, we have Oculus Glass. Like, really? You can't invent your own virtual reality something?
This is a pretty ancient species. They've been around for a while, so you would think their technology is still going to be good enough to have their own.
They're good enough to fly spaceships through space.
Exactly.
So can't you guys invent your own Oculus goggles or something?
Right. But wouldn't have this episode. So
we wouldn't have the episode.
I do like the line from Carr. Your people have faced extinction many times, but you've always managed to avoid it. You seem to recognize the need for change. And then Janeway sort of takes control. She's like, look, let's end this now. I will give you the technology that you can now recreate on your own and just give me back my ship. You know, let me give you, let's just end this. This is ridiculous. And it's important. This scene's very important because now Janeway knows why this is happening. Because before this, she just thought this was just some type of, what's the word I'm trying to say? Not seditious.
Sadistic. But, sort
sadistic,
of like
exactly. Sadistic. Some type of sadistic, weird
torture
thing that they're putting upon the Starfleet crew. And I love her little end line. It would be cunning for you to agree, because Carr has used that adjective for the human race being cunning. And she says, it'll be cunning for you guys to agree to this, because Carr really lets down his guard a little bit. He lets Janeway know why he's doing this. He also lets Janeway know he admires the human race, you know, for being survivors and being able to embrace change, which is something that he's trying to enact with his people, which is something that they are very much against doing. They want to stick to the old ways, right? So this is a critical scene for this entire episode. It changes everything.
I also thought this scene with Carr and Janeway was very bold in its staging, maybe a little heavy-handed almost, because he starts behind the desk in the power position.
Yeah.
And near the end, he kind of comes out to join her, and then she moves back behind her desk to the power position. Like she comes in as the prisoner.
Right.
And he's behind the desk in the power in charge. And by the end, she's behind the desk. It felt slightly heavy-handed to me, but it was cool.
By the end, I would have liked to have seen Carr sitting in Janeway's lap. That would have been an interesting choice as well.
It was, we were close to that. We were heading that direction.
Almost.
We go back to the bar and Taranj is like, he's tired of the simulation. He's drinking some wine. He's like, simulated wine, everything's simulated. Yeah. Like, I want something real.
He's sick of it. J. Paul Bomer, SS captain, is now speaking to Taranj and just kind of getting in his ear at this point. You know, like, you know, this is ridiculous.
Yep.
We need to do something. You know, why aren't we executing these people? And you know, I don't agree with any of this. And at this point, Taranj is like, you know what? Let's just have some singing. Okay. Let's just pass the time, and orders Seven to get up and sing. And Seven, not being the holodeck character any longer, refuses. And I thought it really interesting that she drew the line here, because Taranj says, because he says, if you don't sing, I will kill you. And she says, fine, go ahead. And then she spouts something about, and by the way, the someday Borg might, will someday, you know, you may not be assimilated now, but when the Borg do get, you know, to you guys, you're done, you know, and the last thing you can remember will be my face. And it was sort of like, where is all this bravado really coming
challenging
from? Yeah. What is this? Like, it's kind of weird because she doesn't, I don't know why she got so brave and so cocky and so like, blah, 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 I will die. This is the hill that I die on. Like, really?
Singing.
The singing hill.
I will not sing. There's some things I just will not do.
You can.
And singing is it.
Is it. I draw the line. If you, I cannot sing for you. It is against the core of my body and my morals. I mean, what is this? I don't get it.
Just as he's about to shoot her, though, Carr calls in and says, okay, we've reached a truce.
Yeah.
And there's a ceasefire. Yeah. Let everybody know there's a ceasefire.
Mm-hmm.
And the Nazi or Capitan or whatever.
Yeah.
He says, look, I told you, you know, this guy is making really bad calls. And so when Carr has called for a ceasefire, they've released all of us, Seven and B'Elanna and Tom, and they've been released. And, and then the Nazi's like, see, you know,
he's lost it.
Yeah. You need to go out there and you've got to ignore his orders and go out there and fight these guys.
Mm-hmm.
And they exit. So you can see, we see Taranj, he's gotten to him. He's used Nazi thinking. He, you know, horrible Nazi beliefs and things that he says to Taranj that really gets to him and sends him out the door.
It's so crazy that Nazi ideology has now basically convinced an entirely different species of alien that this is the way to go. It's sort of like Taranj is like, gosh, you're making a lot of sense, you know, which then makes you realize that if you're a good speaker, you can convince people to come down the wrong path very quickly, which is a little dangerous, right?
Especially when you appeal to the ego or a power position or something.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So now we're in the town streets, and I love this scene. And you don't see Paris and Seven that often, but now you have a shot or a scene with Paris and Seven walking along. And boy, Tom is getting into
now that he's aware of what he's doing.
Yeah.
I wish Bobby had been like this. I wish they had written Bobby.
Yeah.
Because he goes, come on, keep it moving. Get the lead out of your pants.
Yeah, yeah.
He yells it. And then Seven says something like mid 20th century American slang. You're enjoying this simulation, aren't you?
What did Paris you call her?
I said, loosen up, baby doll. Yeah. The war's almost over.
The only word you didn't use was toots. You didn't call her toots.
Exactly.
But you said everything else to her, which was hilarious. Yeah.
Very funny.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was enjoying it. But then all of a sudden, bang, there's a shot.
Yeah.
And the fighting starts again. Taranj has come out. And now it is on. And the fighting gets big. We go back to the caves. The drunk Klingons are there, and Doc and Neela, the Doctor and Neelix, ask the Klingons, they, you know, you want to fight? We got to fight for you. We need your help.
Right.
And they don't want to listen. And so Neelix, not as his Klingon persona, but as Neelix goes over and says, You will listen. He really loses it. Like, as Neelix.
What, you remember what predicated that? Like, he first says, excuse me. Like, he's being Neelix. Yeah. Excuse me. And they are not even paying attention. That's when the doctor has his immortal line. They're Klingons, not kittens. And so that's when he gets on his soapbox and yells at them. Come on. He rallies the troops. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. We go to engineering. Janeway's in there trying to shut down the holo emitters.
Mm-hmm.
She calls Harry from engineering.
Yep. She says to overload the holo emitter network using the secondary power relays to trigger the overload. This is when they're interrupted by Taranj, who shows up by himself, and he decides that it's time to end the reign of Carr. And he fires.
He says, step away from the controls.
He does.
Carr just sort of hesitates. Yep. He shoots him once.
Yeah.
And then he's kind of stumbled there, and he says, step away from the controls.
Yeah. And Carr says, listen to me. He's trying to say his point again. And he shoots him again.
Kills him. Yeah. Yep. And Janeway goes down, and then she looks at Taranj. She's like, what are you waiting for? Go ahead, do it.
Yeah, shoot me.
And Taranj says, you're my prey. Yeah. Run.
Yeah.
And then she runs with her shot leg.
Oh.
And we go back to the streets. The battle is raging. We are losing ground. We are outnumbered. Mm-hmm. Seven is modifying this explosive device, a grenade, to emit a burst, a photonic burst to disrupt the holo emitters. We go back to the hall. Janeway runs into a tube, and Taranj comes over, and he's hunting her, and he sort of feels the panel, and he can feel her energy.
Yeah. I really like that part where Taranj touches he can feel that she was here, you know, which was kind of cool. I don't know if he was directed that way or if he chose that action himself, but however that came about, it was effective for me.
Yeah. I have a question. I was thinking about this when the episode finished, but it comes to mind right now. Seems just as good a place as any to talk about it.
Sure.
All the Hirogen are men. Are there no lady Hirogens? Is this just dudes that feel like they got to shoot guns all the time and fight everybody? Is it like, it how do they have baby Hirogens?
It's the most toxic masculine species in the universe.
All they want to do is fight, and there's no ladies around.
None.
I was just like, wait a minute. And then Rebecca and I were talking, and she was like, well, maybe, you know, some reptiles, maybe they don't need females. Well, but then I thought so. I don't know biology that well, but I Googled it. I was like, how do reptiles reproduce? Yeah. They do have male and female.
Some reptiles
have both male and female chromosomes, and they can sort of change, oddly enough. It gets complicated. But I don't think the Hirogen don't have the ladies around. Like, I think they must have the ladies. So where were they?
Right. But there are species on Earth that kind of, you know,
seahorses,
or is it seahorses? Yeah. That can give birth regardless. And they're kind of genderless. Right. And they can give birth.
I think seahorses are the ones where the males are the males give birth, or I don't know.
I think there are some species that have no gender, right? And they're able to still give birth, and they don't have a male or a female designation. I thought that was the case.
I am not that smart.
Okay.
I will just say right now, any opinion I offer will be a total guess because I don't know.
Okay, fine. So they're in the tube. And Janeway is trying to get away. She's in the Jeffries tube. They're trying to get away. They jump to the bridge. Harry sets the timer for the overload. And
wait a minute. What? Let me ask you. Why did you set it at 9 minutes? Like, why didn't you just say now? Because a lot of crap happens that you could have prevented if you just went, how about a 5-second countdown? Why do we need 9 minutes?
The way that I justified that was,
I want to hear it.
My choices were 1 hour, 45 minutes, 30 minutes, 25 minutes, and 9 minutes. Like, 9 minutes was the default shortest amount of time allowed. I couldn't get it any shorter than 9 minutes, but that's the only thing that I could come up with. But you're right.
You had the same thought. I was like,
why is it 9 minutes? That's like an eternity.
It's random, and it's an eternity.
That must be, you know, maybe it's a Brandon Braga thing. Maybe nine has some significance in his life or something. I don't know. Yeah. Or Manosky's life. Who knows?
Yeah.
But the funny thing about this is that in this scene on the bridge, before Harry, before you see the 9 minute thing, you do see the camera is on a Hirogen who's over at one of the side stations there. And he's talking to another Hirogen. He's like, I'll be back. I'm going to sick bay. And then I thought, sick bay? Sick bay is demolished. Where are you going? There's no sick bay. Sick bay blew up. So that was.
Sick bay blew up. And in a few minutes, very soon, Seven's going to get shot. How does she survive?
That's true. The
safety protocols are off.
That's true.
And sick bay is blown up.
That is true.
How did she survive? Anyway.
Well, it's clearly with the Hirogen, whoever the loop group was that adds in those little lines right there, someone didn't get the memo that there is no sick bay. And they probably thought, oh, this is great. He's going to go to sick bay. And there's no sick bay. So I felt like
they must know that, right? I mean, I guess you could say maybe he didn't get maybe it didn't come over the systems alerts or something. But I would think that if sick bay blows up, it's going to be like a tweet that everybody gets.
Yeah. But whose job is that to tell the loop group, hey, you can't say that here. Is that?
Oh, Brad I think Jacobian? It's beyond is that loop group.
Mary no, Howard, whose job is this?
Post producer. That would have been.
Okay, so who's that? Who's the post producer?
That would have been whoever. We had a few different ones. Dawn.
Dawn or, Velasquez. Okay. Or I'm trying to remember all the names of those post
Steve
guys.
Steve was our last
Steve
one.
Was another guy too. Yeah. Okay. So one of the post producers forgot to give the memo.
It would have been them, I think.
Yeah. All right.
But I don't know. Maybe they were logicking it some other way.
Yeah.
I just want to know the logic of Seven got shot.
Yes.
The safety protocol's off and there's no sick bay. How?
I'm assuming that there is some type of dermal regenerator kit.
Okay. It's her Borg technology. All right. That I can go with.
Maybe.
Maybe.
Okay. Let's move on. Town
streets. 9 minutes. Yeah. We go on the streets. Seven's finishing this grenade. She's about to throw it and she gets shot, as we discussed. She goes down appearing dead, by the way. And Paris jumps over. Now, did you notice the helmet in my face?
No. Why?
I remember shooting this and the helmet kept falling. Because when I turn around and look down, it would
fall
it didn't
down.
Fit me. It would fall. And I remember them just going, we did it a couple of times and it kept falling in my face. And they were like, it's fine. Don't worry about it. We got it. And then I looked at it tonight. I'm like, I couldn't even see where I was diving. Like, and here's another thing, by the way, I noticed.
Your all helmet those didn't fit.
Many of those battle scenes in the day and nighttime had a really strong rain happening. I don't know if you noticed, like when the doctor... It was raining. I mean, it never rains in LA. I mean, it's very
rare.
So
that was not added rain.
No.
That was real rain.
That was real
rain. That you
guys
were dealing with. Yeah.
Yeah. It was raining.
I did notice that. Those streets were wet.
Yep.
Yeah. Interesting. And then you're right. In Los Angeles, it's usually dry 360 days of the year. So to see any type of precipitation is odd. I agree.
Yeah. But they're captured. Paris goes after this grenade.
Yeah.
With this helmet in his eyes, but the grenade does explode, go off, and it does.
It takes take out all the U.S. troops and all your ammunition as well, right? All your holographic weapons and grenades.
Everything's near
gone
us.
Near you. But of course, everyone else, all the Germans,
they still have their
they're
stuff.
They're still okay because they weren't affected by it. So you guys are now.
So we are captured.
Mm-hmm. You're captured.
Yep. We go back to the hall. Janeway's running. She sees this area where the holo emitters do not reach because she sees someone laying there, a holographic character,
and his
legs are only halfway there.
Right.
And then she pulls him back and the legs appear. So she's like, oh, that's the end of the holo projector.
Well, I didn't actually the holo. Remember that part of the deck was blown out. So the holo emitters were damaged there. This is what I
see.
You know what I'm saying? So because Harry had already rigged the entire ship to have holo emitters practically, right?
Yeah.
By, as ordered by Carr. So I said because of the damage in that area that the holo emitters blew out. But regardless, the holo emitters are not working there. That's why his legs had disappeared.
His legs were gone, and then she pulled him back, and they appeared. So she
Yep. She hatches this plan to sort of lure
smart
Taraj over there.
Mm-hmm. Back to the town streets. And now SS Captain is talking to Brigitte, aka Torres. And he says, "I will spare your life because you are carrying a German child, but that is the only reason why." And that was it. So
we go back to the hall, and Taranj is heading down, and she's hiding behind some debris and says, "Please don't shoot me. Don't shoot me. I'll give up."
Yeah.
And so she appears to sort of be giving up. Yeah. And as he approaches to try to get a better angle on her, his weapon fritzes out because his holographic weapon is beyond the range of the holo emitters.
She clocks him with a pipe. She's like, bam.
Yeah.
But then did you ask this question also? Did you have this question as well? After she hits him, she looks down and the weapon's gone though at that point. So do you see what I'm saying?
Was fritzing because he was on the edge. What I thought was, he's on the edge of this. He looks down. It's fritzing. She hits him and knocks him back. And now he's back into the holographic space and it's laying on the ground.
And the weapon falls back into where the emitters are. Okay,
it's splitting hairs a little bit.
Okay.
But I think it has to be some version of that.
All right.
She seizes the weapon.
Mm-hmm. And now he is the prey. And Janeway is running after him, which is lovely. A little switch here. A little change of pace. Yeah. Right.
Go back to the streets and... Yeah. All of us are about to be executed. We're pulled up and lined up by some walls here.
So it's Philippe, Bobby, and Miller. Bobby Davis, Captain Miller, and Philippe Tuvok that are lined up against the wall to be shot.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And just as that's getting ready to be arranged, the Klingons arrive.
Kapla! They run in with such emotion, and
here come the Klingons, and they're stalled for a minute. We cut back into the corridors. Taranj is running down a corridor and gets to the edge of the exposed holodeck that was blown up, the big chunk, and he's
at the
down.
Breach, and he's looking out at the town now, right?
Mm-hmm. Looking out at the town, and he's looking down as the Klingons are arriving. We cut back down and there's Dr. Neelix standing under an awning at a cafe. Because it was raining on the Universal Studios backlot where we filmed this at European Street.
Yeah.
It was raining so hard, they put them under some, like an awning of a cafe as the Klingons ran by, they're standing. And then I think Bob even, like he leaned
played,
out.
He played.
He played
it,
the rain.
It's sort of like, why are you? You're the hologram. You're a hologram. Why are you playing? Being annoyed by the rain. So that was my note. Like, I don't know. I don't know why you're doing that, other than for comedic, level.
Comedic.
Suppose,
it was just comedic. Right? It was like standing on the edge of the awning and then dripping on his head. And
Taranj is at the breach. He's looking out. He sees the Klingons attacking all of the soldiers, and he is concerned. And at that moment, Janeway arrives and she has the gun trained on him. And she says, "It's done. It's over." And she gives him a chance. She says, "Don't even try to, make a move." And he does. He doesn't listen to her. He makes the move and he gets shot.
We cut back below this big breach.
Yeah.
And we see him falling towards camera. It was a digital version, though, that body falling. And back in the 90s, those digital CGI people were not nearly as detailed as
they're not as good as now by any means, right?
And that's one of the first. We may have had one or two of those situations on our show before, but it's very rare. So I was kind of like, whoa, they really did a lot of, that's a complex VFX that Dan Curry did there. It was very cool.
Like on a scale from 1 to 10, let's say 10 is how VR is now, like or any type of digital rendered character now. Okay.
Yeah.
I wonder if 10 is now, what was that rendering back then on a scale of 1 to 2
10? Or a 3?
Yeah. Very low. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's so much better now. Mm-hmm. Just processors and technology and light control and light modeling and space modeling. All that stuff is so much better. So much more detail.
Yep. Okay. Yeah. We jump to the bridge and that's when the overload happens. So we finally,
The nine minute
overload.
So
funny that you said that.
Why 9 minutes?
Because that's Harry's favorite number. He loves 9.
Exactly. It's his lucky number.
He loves it so much. Town streets. there's hand-to-hand combat, yeah, which happens until the overload happens, right? So now everything stops. We have a lovely corridor montage at the end.
I have a question, though.
Yes.
When this overload happens and all the hologram characters disappear, why doesn't the whole set disappear, too? The people disappear, but
you're so it should look like real. My background right now.
It should look like projectors or wherever we were. Like the whole thing.
It should have all been gone.
It should have all been gone.
It would have been bulkhead of the ship. That's it. You're right.
I'm just saying. Okay, never mind.
Good catch. Look at that. Anyway. You're like a regular Sherlock Holmes when it comes to catching things. I'm a detective. I love it.
So we go to the captain's log, and we've got a montage of Starfleet walking down the hall, and we got a montage of Hirogen walking down the hall. And during this log, she does reference that the fighting continued for a while. Mm. That just because the holodeck thing went off, they kept fighting. So there must have been, you know, quite a bit more, which is also scary because our sickbay was blown up. I keep, you know, wanting to emphasize that, like, we had no sick bay and the war, this battle of Hirogens continued. So we missed a lot of ugly stuff, right? Anyway, Janeway says, after lengthy negotiations, the Hirogen have agreed to accept this optronic data core, that we're going to have a truce. They can create their own holodeck technology. And she tells the Hirogen when they meet up in cargo bay, she says, I made a promise to the Alpha Hirogen, to Carr, and I intend to keep my promise. And she says, finally, she says, please accept this trophy to create a new future for your people.
Yeah, well, the exact quote. Yeah. Let me just say, she says, accept this trophy. You can use it to create a new future for your people. At the very least, you can hang it on your bulkhead. Hirogen was like, I don't believe in what Carr was doing. He's too much of a, you know, revolutionary, right?
Yeah.
Great final speech, final line from Janeway.
Yeah.
We have an exterior space shot of the Hirogen vessels moving away from Voyager.
Yep.
And that is the end of the episode. Is your theme the same? Is your theme the same from last week?
I'm guessing my theme this week is just stop fighting. Fighting is dumb. That's my theme.
Oh, wow.
I don't remember my theme from last week, but fighting is dumb, you guys. Okay.
Hey, guys. Hey, y'all. Stop fighting.
Fighting is dumb. There's other techniques we can use to solve our problems other than the fighting stuff. I'm being a little silly and glib, but like the truth is when they talked about, when Carr talked with Janeway about, you know, I've learned so much about your people and how they've been on the verge of extinction many times. And they talk about World War II being one of the, you know, some of the worst of it.
Yep.
Fighting is dumb. Like, when are we going to freaking learn to stop this war thing and this hatred thing?
Yeah.
You know, I think that is the theme to me, is like, just stop. Mm-hmm. Stop with it.
Yeah, because if you think about the loss of life from World War II, it's just crazy how many people died.
Millions
during that conflict. And not just soldiers. Not just soldiers, but civilians left and right. Many civilians. You know, and I in a perfect world, conflict between two countries should be settled between the two leaders and by boxing gloves, so no one dies. So whoever knocks the other person out is the winner. That's it, right?
Sure.
So it would have been
a game. They could play a video game.
Exactly.
The winner of this round of Halo.
This round of Halo is the winner of the conflict. Exactly. Yeah.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Well, my theme is similar to last week, because it's still the same episode, really. And that theme is, do not be afraid of change. Learn to embrace change, because change is how you grow as a human being. So that's my theme.
I like it.
Thank you.
I like it.
All right, everyone. Thank you for tuning in for Killing Game Part 2.
Thanks, everyone.
Such a crazy
episode. Thanks for joining us. Yeah, big, big episode. Scale of 1 to 10. What do you give this one?
I'm still going to give it a high mark. It's still going to get a 9 from me. So.
Wow, nice.
Yeah.
I don't remember what I did last week, but I feel like this week should be higher than last week. I'm going to give this an 8.
Oh, wow.
What did I do last week?
You gave it a 7, I think, is what you
did. I did?
So, yeah. So you did raise it.
Okay. I would give it an 8, maybe even an 8.5, because I really did like a lot. It was action-packed.
Oh.
Yeah.
You added a 0.5 on there?
Give it an 8.5. Yeah. Wow. Let me give it if I said 7 last week, I'm going to say 8.5 this week.
Okay. Would you give it an 8.75?
No.
Okay.
Just 8.5. Did I give Mortal Coil 10 out of 10?
Yeah, you did.
This
is why I enjoy Robbie's company so much. Just these little small interactions like that when I go, but would you give it a 9.75? No. just like, no. I draw the line here.
Yeah.
See, no. Just like 7.9 draws a line at singing, I draw a line at 9.75. I don't go that far. Okay.
Nope.
All right.
I might sing it, but I won't do it.
Okay. All right. Well,
thanks, everyone.
Thank you, everybody. Join us next week when Robbie and I review the episode Vis-a-vis.
Oh, yeah.
Vis-a-vis.
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 Great. Right. Thanks, everybody. Have a great week.
Bye.